Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Welcome. My name is Ole Magnus Olavsrud. I'm coming from Norway. My wife and I, we've been married for 43 years, so we're a little ahead of you, 43 years. We have three married sons and 11 grandchildren. So we have we are a flock, and we are very pleased with that. And through these 43 years, we have had our good times, we have had our hard times, we have had normal lives. It was especially demanding when our oldest son, after he and his wife had got two beautiful daughters, they were divorced. We have been through that very close, the struggles and when something breaks up, the pain that comes from it, directly and indirectly. So when I'm here, I'm just a very normal man, family man. I have worked much with this theme. I think I've had close to 25,000 couples in family seminars. Not like this, because this is more like a gathering, but I'm very used to having seminars for example, Friday night and a full Saturday or a full weekend or three evenings. It can take different forms, but what I was asked by ELF was to try to pull together some of the key principles and some of the processes I cover when I have a seminar over at minimum 8 hours. So this will be a way of giving you just kind of a teaser, because they wanted me to pull together something that I have found valuable as processes and principles as we try to live together. So that's the basis for what I'm sharing. And if you have your notes with you, or you have them on your computer or wherever, you can follow there. I may have to jump some, but I try to follow it and at least indicate where we are. There are six main points in these notes. And instead of just covering my material and then open up for questions and answers, I think it is maybe better to just take one point at a time and comment on it. And please, as we are the kind of group we are, just break in, raise your hand, disagree, throw in a personal experience or whatever. But I think I will try to take one point at a time and then open up for questions, if that's okay. The first necessarily has to do with how do we think about what a marriage is? What is the scriptural basis for it? How does it come together? What are the ingredients? What does God say about it? And before I dive into that, I think family life, good family life, good homes are very much on the heart of God. One of the intriguing verses in Isaiah is 32:18, where God says that my people will live in peaceful dwelling places, in secure homes. So God's heart is that we, as his people, should live in peaceful homes, secure homes, where we can rest. And it's some time since Isaiah was written. But basic needs haven't changed much. We need homes where we can not feel to be at the test, but a place where we can rest, a place where we feel that we can be secure. But many don't feel secure in their family lives. And many don't get rest from their family life, more like spending energy. I have more than once heard people say after a holiday or even a weekend, no, it will be good to get into work again. That's less demanding. And in some ways it is. When children are small, it's much to do and it's hard work. but I mean there at times when there are tensions among us, unresolved conflicts, comparison, unforgiveness, we use so much energy in our home. So the last thing it is a place to rest. Therefore, it's good to start with that desire that God has for us. To understand what God thinks about what a marriage is, it's very good to start in the very beginning. It's interesting because both in Genesis 2:24 and in Matthew 19 and in Ephesians 5, it's exactly the same wording. That's the only time in the Bible where we have exactly the same in the Old Testament, exactly in the Gospel, and in one of the letters. And as you know, the way it goes is like, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. Here it says, a man will leave his father and mother, and that's true. From my experience, I would also add, it would not have harmed had it said, and therefore shall a daughter leave her mother. That is also often quite to the point. And I come back to that, because the attachment there often is the good attachment, when the attachment between mother and daughter is too strong, that is not very helpful. It is about the man to leave, but also for the woman to leave. So the first thing God says, we have to leave. And I mean, I think the best way of saying what that is just about weakening our loyalty. Because if we are entering into a relationship with a new person, our loyalty need to be primarily to our wife, to our husband. Of course, there are still all this about honoring your parents, and of course we live in good relationships. But it's interesting to say, in order to establish a good marriage, it starts with leaving. And then it goes on to say that we'll be united and we will become one. You have this illustration in your notes, but I want to just draw it just to make it as clear as possible, and I will come back to it. Because, I mean, we come from the place where God created us as two individuals. And then he says, this is me, this is she, first you have to leave. And then you decide for something, for a new unity. And then it's interesting, then it is, we have both, this is me, this is you, and this is we. So now we go from being two different persons to be a new we, the new unity created by God. And Ephesians 5 paints a beautiful mirror picture of what that is. It mirrors the relationship between Christ and his church. So we become this new unity, this unit even. But we still keep being two individuals. Each one of us have our own feet to stand on. Our identity is not in the relationship. Our identity is not in the level of intimacy in our relationship. It's not in the how it goes with our children. Our identity is still, we are sons and daughters of God. But if God leads us together, we become one. And I think it's fair to say that from all these couples I've worked with, also tons of counseling with couples, to find this balance of living our lives towards one another and create a strong we. Not only kind of a cover, but a real we with intimacy, a real we with content. And then at the same time, have the freedom to use our gifts, our interests in the workplace, in cultural life, in our workplace, in our church, wherever. And I think most of us, the very basic challenging we are facing is to find this good balance of living our lives towards one another and create that intimacy, that reality of the relationship, and at the same time not bind one another. Because love never binds. Love always sets the other free. And to the extent we start kind of tying one another up, we're talking about something very different than love. Because love always releases, always gives freedom. So we all the time choose unity. We choose intimacy. And in the midst of everyday life, that is not an easy thing. So with that illustration, I just want to move on, but I will come back to it. This is kind of the most basic and simplest way I can think of it. Maybe that's an international saying, but in Norway at least we have the saying of he found his better half, or she found her better half, and then they were kind of one. I mean, when did God ever create a half person? I mean, that thinking leads to catastrophe, because then our identity becomes so much linked up and we easily end up in something that we call a symbiotic relationship. This is me, this is you, and this is us. And we are so enmeshed in one another that we don't have a good relationship. If something happens with the one, it happens with the other. For the good things, but also for the bad things. So to have this this oneness, this intimacy, and at the same time to keep our identities and our responsibilities as good stewards of what God has given us. So this would be kind of the first thing. Let me just start. Any comments on this from the outset? Yeah?
It reminds me of the Trinity, how the one false teaching is that God is only one person.
Yeah.
He's actually three persons.
Yeah.
And the other false teaching is that there are basically three gods.
Yeah.
And it's because marriage is a parable of the Trinity and of Christ and the Church, you see the same dynamic here.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we would never say that Christ and the Church is only one. I mean, they are kind of separate. At the same time, they are one. So, yeah?
Yeah, I've seen the same illustration, but then the aim is kind of to become more and more overlapped.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, it's confusing then, because it's almost like the goal is to be more and more one.
Yeah.
Like being immersed.
Yeah. Then I think we easily end up in what we often call symbiotic relationships. And it's very natural and very normal to be in a symbiotic relationship the first period of our love story, because then we are so close to one another, and that's great. But to have, I mean, statistics show that it takes about 2 years till that very idealistic, a romantic love is over just as a strong emotion. Then we need something stronger. Then we, yeah, that's another, but I should not move into too many new things. But
are you meaning from when you got married or from the place you got together?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's basically about when our emotions really were aroused and something happened between us, and we call it to fall in love, and we can call it different things. But of course, then something new happens when we commit ourselves to one another. So I would rather say it is from the time when we commit ourselves to one another. so you have some more time. I wondered if you were kind of get scared now, if it's about running out. Let's keep this illustration in mind, but I'm very firm to have this balance is very key, because we have to be careful so that we don't create a kind of dependency on one another that is not helpful. Then we move on. The second main point is that I think it's important to understand that the family is a system. And I've angled that from two different perspectives. The first perspective is that we talk about the extended family. And you see the illustration on the bottom of the page. This is what they call a genogram. And when I work with a seminar, I always work with this genogram. And when I counsel couples, I often have them draw this genogram, because it places their relationship in a three-generational thing, if they have children. If they don't have children, we just take two-generational. I think this is kind of self-explanatory, this illustration. I'll say more about it. But it's in this illustration, there are Norwegian names, but I think you will understand them. Per and Liv, they are the couple. And they have siblings, Nina and Ole, and they have a daughter, Kine. And then you see the parents up there. And then there are three signs. If you see between Liv and Kine, there are three parallel lines. That's when there is an unhealthy attachment. The son or the daughter hasn't left their parents, or the mother or the father haven't been willing to release them. Because it isn't easy to leave father and mother when your mother or father won't release you. That is as much a challenge as it is for children to leave. So if it's that unhealthy attachment, then the three parallel lines. Then you see to the very right there, this just a dotted line. That is when there is little intimacy. It's not a problem, but we are just like two ships that pass one another in the darkness. We are just out there. No connections, no communication, just kind of a very stale relationship. While when you have this zigzag, that's when it's conflictual. So if you follow this on the next page, when I work with this, either in the seminar or when I counsel couples, the first thing we do, they make it, they draw it, as you can see it here, and then the first question I ask them to think about: what are the positive experiences you bring with you from your home? The values, the experiences that are kind of engraved in you from your childhood. Because it is so good for us to think back and think about what did we get at home? Because that has marked us for life. Some of these values. I had a mother, would some say, that was very hospitable. Wow, I'd carry this with me as a good value. And then the husband would say, wow, that's... But I remember one thing I bring with me from my home, that was my father treated me and my brother very differently. I felt he always favored my brother, and I felt always very small. That's a strong experience you bring with you. But to start with, what are some positive values and experience we bring with us? It's good for us as the children, but it's also a good way of honoring our parents for what they gave us. And then I have them to draw these different kinds of lines, zigzag or whatever. And then they work on this together. And as I've jotted down there, I would say that more than 50% of the challenges a couple experience is not due to the relationship itself between the two of them. It is about unhealthy mechanisms in the extended family. It's about difficult, unmet needs to parents, maybe a difficult relationship to a sibling, or a conflictual relationship with a child. All of those influence the husband and wife relationship. And I think it's often very unfair if we just think that this challenge we're facing now, it's just about us. So through working with this genogram, it is possible to see what's about me and my spouse. What do we need to work with? But in some situations, it may be that the wife really has to leave her mother or her father. Or the husband has to deal with a deep-rooted conflict with his brother, etc., etc. You understand what I mean? Because when we understand more of the systemic forces that are in our family, then we can do something about it. A well-known Christian psychiatrist in Norway, who established a center, the most well-known in Norway, he used to say, what we become aware of, we can often do something about. But what we are not aware of does something to us all the time. And I had so many examples where the conflict between the husband and wife is because of, for example, strange relationships with parents or other in the extended family. That's why it is important to see our relationship in this greater context.
Could I just ask a question there?
Please.
Young people today tend to replace family with friends.
Yeah.
So when I see the drawing, I think, is it beginning to be more normal to talk about the relationship with friends in this context and not just family members? Because it's so important for young people to have friends. It's basically, they have basically replaced family.
Yeah. So what you say is that young people have a tendency to even replace family with friends.
Yeah.
So that then that would mean that some young people really need to leave their friends in order to create a strong relationship. And I don't think that's too far off, because I've seen examples where we are so bound up to peers and friends and what they think and strong bindings that it doesn't help our marriage. So I think you're right.
So it is a tendency.
It is a tendency, definitely. Okay. Definitely a tendency. So that's a good point.
Just one question. What is the dotted line between AFA and
peer relationship?
What relationship?
Peer relationship.
Stina and Eva?
Yeah,
the dotted line?
Yeah.
That's a distant relationship.
Distant.
Yeah, just as I said, the two ships that pass one another in the darkness.
Okay. I thought that was the dotted line between Sjur, Stina, and Siri, or whoever.
No.
Okay, what is that?
That is, they are not married.
Okay.
But they do have a child.
Okay, unmarried child.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But then it's another systemic thing. And that is what I think in English is called the mobile. You understand what that is? Something you hang up and you have different elements of it. That's something we have. I have drawn a mobile here. And you know, when you use a mobile in your home, there can be hearts or dogs or angels or I don't know what's hanging in these different threads. But you know, the typical thing is that if you cut this string here, what happens? Does all the other elements keep still? No, it just goes like this. If you pull this one, wow, then they swing up. These elements, they are bound together with visible threads. In our core family, we are bound together with invisible threads. But do we influence one another strongly? Let's say you see in the illustration here, the boy has kind of lost the grip and left the system. Let's call him Lars. That's a good Norwegian name. Let's call him Lars. He is 8 years old. He has always been very committed in school, raising his hand very kind of, very on it all the time. But now he's sitting there, tired, uninspired, is just to seem to live in his own world. So one day the teacher calls his parents, and the father picks up the phone, and then the teacher says, "Have you noticed Lars the last days? He seems so tired, he seems so sad. Have you been to the doctor with him? Maybe he is ill, because he seems like that." But then the father thinks, probably not. This is about the very difficult relationship my wife and I have these days. Because they are in a very difficult relationship, because she is in the midst, the mother is in the midst of a severe conflict in her workplace. So when she comes home, she has very little energy left. And the father, he has suddenly got in a conflict with his brother. So he is using much of his emotional energy there. Therefore, they have so little to give to one another. So when they have a poor relationship, Lars picks that up. So when the teacher asks, "What's wrong with Lars?" That's not the smartest question. It's nothing wrong with Lars, but Lars has become a symptom bearer of the conflicts between his parents. And as an 8-year-old boy, he isn't constructed to bear that burden. And 2 days ago, his mother kind of took him aside and wanted to try to get him on her side in the conflict. And that's not for 8-year-old boys to experience. So a much better question that teacher could have asked was, "Well, how are you doing as a family these days?" And then the father might have said, "Wow, it's not an easy time for us." Then, as I said here, then it's much better to ask what has happened. Because then we understand more of the dynamics between us. From that illustration, we can also think more about how does each one of us contribute in a good way in this team as a family is. Because each one of us, the child of 3, the child of 10, the mother, the father, all of us bring something to this mobile. And it happens something very, very good with any relationship when we are eager to look for the strong sides of one another. I mean, in a soccer team or whatever kind of team, in a board or whatever, if we start just looking for the weak points in one another, we don't get a good team. I mean, in soccer, we would really work on each one should play from his or her strengths. Then we get some synergy, then we get a good team. And I've seen so many examples where family comes into patterns of criticizing one another, catching one another on their weak points, as we often do, and then you get a very negative atmosphere. But when you, when I've seen and been able to help them to say, "Yeah, I see there are some needs here. This little boy of 3 years, he's very strong-willed. But what is his strong sides? And this daughter of 10 is very sensitive. Maybe she is a very empathic person, and instead of thinking that she is too weak, should you start praising her for her empathy?" So that it happens something with the whole system, with the whole dynamics in the in our mobile when we start looking for the strengths in one another. So each one of these illustrations, the two circles, the genogram, and this mobile, all of them help us to think about how our relationship is not only a relationship in its own, but belongs to something bigger. Any comment on this before we move on? As I said, we will kind of touch on them and maybe create some curiosity to dig deeper in some of them. No, then I think we move on, because I would like to go deeper into this kind of the team, and then we may go back to this one again. How our team, our marriage relationship can function as a good team. Because it is so easy that our personalities and preferences and temperaments and interests and different gender, etc., end up in polarization, competing with one another, instead of creating synergy and complementarity. If I think next to communication, if we come that far, we'll say something about that. But I think the number one challenge I experience among couples is how can we complement one another? She has this strength and this weakness. I have this strength and she has and this weakness. How can these come together as a team? Because when we, and let's say temperament, for example, and then I'm not talking about level of anger, but we often talk about that we can be introvert or extrovert personalities. And in our case, that's exactly the situation. Some of you would guess that if we are different, I may be the extrovert, and I am. My wife is a very wise, much more introvert person. But be careful. I'm not talking about primarily how we act socially. To be introvert or extrovert is about how do we charge our batteries. The extrovert person charges his or her battery in the run. I can come into a room very tired, and then I meet people like you, and something happens. My batteries are charged just meeting people, and events happen. I come to a point, of course, I need to rest. But the extrovert person charges his battery in that way. While the introvert person, he or she need more time on their own, in solitude, working in the garden, running, just sitting down with a book, just to be with themselves, and with God for that matter. But to have this understanding how we charge one another's batteries differently, and I see that some of you understand what I'm talking about. And that was such a big challenge for us. So after we had been married for 3 years, and that's 40 years ago, we were starting to polarize. Because I was such an optimistic, kind of moving on person, Kari had to balance that to go the other way, and then that's not complementarity, and that's not synergy. That's just polarization. And we were just about developing patterns that they were so destructive that we needed help. And I'm happy that we asked for help in that situation before we dug over tracks or whatever too deep. And we needed help to see what is about personalities and temperaments here. And we got help from that, and humanly speaking, I can't see how we could have continued, because we had already, after 3 years, developed so unhealthy patterns. When we experience that we are different, I have jotted down three possible attitudes with which we can meet one another. And the first attitude is when we try to change one another. And who of us haven't had that notion? And we, at least, if we don't say it, we hear ourselves thinking, had it not been for you. If you had only been a little more like that, hadn't it been for your, etc. And what we convey to the other one in that situation is that I wish you were different. Our marriage would have been so much better had you only been different. And what we really do then is that we convey some kind of an ideal picture of the person we would like to have with us in life. And all of us know when we try to change another person against his or her will, we just end up in conflict. We can never ever change another person. If that person isn't motivated or see the need for change, we are only raising conflicts. And this is a big theme, and on this I spend much time, but our frame now doesn't allow us to do that. The second attitude, when we experience that we are different and she likes that and he likes that and have very different interests or whatever it is, what we often end up with is that we withdraw and we resign. We kind of pull back. I might say that, well, I see that my wife is like this. When I think about her mother, she's exactly the same. So my expectations that she should change is zero or close to zero. Or I may say, if my wife Kari says, Ulamangus, in the beginning that was very much the case. I was so weak to show emotions or express emotions, and I struggled so much to share personal things. Some struggle to understand that now, but that's where I come from. And in the first period, I said, but Kari, you have met my father, haven't you? He was a man of few words. He was a hardworking car mechanic. He came tired home. I can't remember once in my upbringing that he expressed emotions or put words to things in me. So I never learned that. So of course you have to accept me the one I am. And then we hear it. It's a dead end street. It helps Kari to understand where I come from. But it's extremely childish and it's extremely immature if I use my background as an eternal excuse for staying the one I am. And that's why we often end up in withdrawing and resigning and say it's not good. So, and then the last and the third attitude that is the one we would really want to work with is to respect one another. And that may be known to you, but the word to respect, the Latin word is respectare. Respectare. And if we say that, re, we recognize that from recycling once more. We do it again and again and again. Spectare has to do with looking. Those are spectacles. Something is spectacular. We see something. So that means that to respect another person basically means to look once more. Be curious about the other one. In the beginning of a love relationship, we are so curious. We ask questions and we keep asking questions and we can't get enough time to ask. But experience tells that easily stops. We just start taking one another for granted. So the real meaning of to respect one another in this kind of a relationship is to keep that curiosity or bring the curiosity back again if we have lost it. It does a lot to a relationship when we, after 10 years or 5 years or 25 years or whatever, take a new step of a desire to get to know the other one. So what do you think now? How did it feel when your boss treated you like this? I see what happens with, you know, when the children are angry. So help me, what does that do to you? I mean, that we keep that curiosity, that is a key thing. And I think the most basic, and if there is one scripture, I hope you can remember it. I've jotted it down there, Psalm 139, verse 13 to 15. There, that's David who says, "You have created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb, and you have woven me together." That is quite a statement. And then he says, "How wonderfully you have made me." Think about, and this is often when I have many hours with people, I think this is normally the most important question I ask. And I still think so. If the husband, or if I, to put it that way, if I start thinking about myself, created by God, knit together, woven together with patterns, with colors, with my indigeneity, this is me, no one like me. And if I start thinking exactly the same about my wife, that does something with my attitude. If I think that my wife is just that person created, hand-woven, knit together by God himself with purpose, somehow my desire to change her vanish, or at least is reduced. And if I have a tendency to despise myself or look down on myself, have low thoughts about myself in a marriage, and that often happens, if the one has very low thoughts about himself or herself, it's not easy for the other one to affirm. But if this passage, Psalm 139, kind of hits me in the heart, and the Holy Spirit does something, gives both me and the other one a deep identity, that gives me a new way of thinking about myself, about the other, and consequently on the we. Because then each one of us brings something that is totally unique. Nobody else can bring. And that makes the we just such a precious thing. Because each one of us brings exactly what God gave us into that relationship. This is not romanticizing. There are challenges, but this is about the basic attitude towards one another, about how can we live with our differences. Then we will need to learn how to live with differences in a new way. We will have to learn to live with unmet needs, because none of us can fully give the other one what the other one neither deserves nor would like. We have to learn to live with unmet needs. But I think in any stage of a marriage, be it 3 or 30 or 50 years or whatever, I think it's a very good question to ask. What was it you fell in love with in your no husband or no wife? What was it about her that attracted you? What was it about him that really made you fall in love with him? What was it then? And then have people talk together, the husband and wife talk together and say, where is that now? Have I tried to kind of rub it off from you? And have I just kind of tried to hide some of my things out here in the periphery and stop playing it in? Because I'm that boyish, optimistic person, and I felt in the beginning attacked on that one. Have I kind of crumbled and been a little shy and hidden here in the periphery, and have stopped playing my boyishness and my enthusiasm into it because I've been attacked on it? Then both of us lose. So to release again that awareness of what is it that God gave us and that made us feel very attracted by one another. That is really a key thing. Let's just pause now. I see the time goes fast, but we cover what we cover. It's better that we touch something kind of understandable. While you might think, let me just take point B also, and then we can talk about it. Because Romans 15, 1 through 7, that is a key, another key passage. Romans 15, 1 to 7. And I just point to that. There Paul says, "We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Each of us should please his neighbor for his good to build him up." No, we are not talking about the neighbor. No, we are talking about the husband and wife. Because what is it in English? This we have in the playground.
Seesaw.
Thank you. This is a seesaw, and the dynamics of a seesaw. We know it. It's if you're about the same weight, one here and one there. If one goes out here, then the other one must go out here. If one insists standing here, and the other one will stay here. If I start moving that direction, the other one can start moving that direction to keep in balance. That's the simple, very simple idea about this. And then Paul says that those of you are strong, you should... They ought to bear with the failings of the weak. So then he would say, the other one may have some weaknesses. But then, of course, nobody is strong on every area, but maybe weak on some other area, and here this one may be strong. And then Paul says something interesting, because then he says, how do you use your strength? Do you use your strength to kind of crush the other one and to make that other person duck even more and feel even smaller? Or do you use your strength to support and to lift up the other one, to build him or her up? And I think that's a very, it's very much wisdom in that. And then Paul goes on, and then he said in verse 6, accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you. And you hear, if we in our relationship start using our strength to support the other one in areas where she or he feels weak, then you are drawn to one another. And the other way around. When this one is strong, tries to help this person, the other one, in that area where he or she feels weak. Because here it says, verse 7, accept one another. It could, as well as it is in other translations, have said, therefore receive one another. It's the same, just different translations. And then that's about what it is, because when we use our strength to support the other one, not to crush the other one, then we are accepting one another and we are respecting one another, and then we start moving towards one another and create something good together. And then it's interesting, here it says, for everything that was written in the past was written to teach us so that through endurance and encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. So what does it say? We need endurance and encouragement that the scriptures give us. And that will give us hope. And then verse 5, may the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you a spirit of unity. You see the same words. It's about endurance and encouragement. So the scriptures and God himself is characterized exactly by the same thing, characterized by endurance and encouragement. And I can think of fewer words that are so relevant in a relationship that those two needs. Sometimes I just need endurance. I need to hang in there for different reasons. Other times, I just need encouragement when I'm down. And so God says, so this brings in a new dynamic, because he says God himself and the scriptures, they give hope and they give unity. What about that? And therefore we know, of course, that this triangle is a very good triangle. That's the only triangling that works. How we can work on being complementary to one another in our relationship, how God and his word can help us to endure when life is tough, and how it can help us and encourage us when we need that. I see that, not surprisingly, time is running, but let's take some time to talk about what we have covered now, about the respect thing and about the strong and the weak and how we can complement one another. Yeah.
In Ephesians it talks about husbands love your wives, mm-hmm. wives respect your mm-hmm. husbands. But I was wondering if you could share your perspective on maybe how husbands and wives need to do this in different ways.
I think that's a difficult question, how men and women do this differently. Because I do know what Ephesians 5 says about love and respect. Then the intro to it in verse 21 is about this, or the mutuality in this. But I do fully recognize in my own life that the need for respect, I have that need for respect, and I know that Kali has that need for love, but does she need respect? And do I need love? So I would be, I think that it has also much to do with personalities, to put it that way. So I would be very careful of just kind of building a wall there, because this is so much about personalities.
Well, let's say that one person is very emotional and the other person is very rational.
So you say the one is very emotional and the other one is
very rational.
Irrational, yeah, that's the word you use. Let's say now, if this is me and if this is Kari, not so far away. as a matter of fact, if I sense that Kari respects me for being this way, and I grow in seeing how much I need her way of being more rational, because if I should just go my emotional way, where will I end? I desperately need a person with me who can balance me, who can be more rational. Because both this is a strength and this is a strength. If we see those times when I have been able to use Kari's way of being rational, I have been also freer to be me as an emotional person. Because then we see that we complement one another. We express different, even different sides of God. And so I think the deepest question, the deepest part of it is that thing about respect again. But let's just say how I work with this. Because had I now had 40 minutes teaching on this last issue, then I would have given them half an hour, as I do after every topic. Half an hour to 40 minutes teaching, then half an hour for the two to interact. Then a new topic, half an hour to interact. Because I do know that knowledge is knowledge. Few of us get divorced or in deep trouble because we know too little. It's more often, that's what Romans says also, it's what we do with what we do know that is the problem, if you don't do it. So then they have half an hour, and what I do then, first question I ask them to work on, they get the sheet of paper, is what do you perceive as the strength of your spouse? and what do you see as a strength in yourself? For some, it's easier to find the strength of the other one than to be honest and true about your own strengths. And so they work separately. They don't talk. So that's the first question. The second question is, when do you experience that differences are positive and complementary? And that's an important thing for them to think about. When do our differences do us good? And then the third question is, when does our differences lead to conflict, for example, in those areas you are mentioning here? And it's, of course, no very simple answer to that. But I think that the basic thing is, can we come to a point where we see the strength in differences? Can we see that together we are stronger as a team? If one of us brings some good rationality to our relationship, one of us are able to bring in more the emotional aspect to see the emotional aspects of life. I think that is a kind of the basic, deepest question. But of course, when I work with a couple on this, it's not that simple. How they think about themselves and how they think about the other one. Both are so important. Because, as I said, some say, was it not because of you, we would have had a good time. But for many, it's also, had it not been for me, had I only been more patient, had I been able to give more of myself sexually, had I only been different. And then we are kind of shrinking ourselves to a small piece, and the other one becomes very strong, and I feel so little. I think that the last minutes, I would jump over a few things. I just want to say a few things about the last point. I did jump now both the area of identity, because to know who we are and who have influence to be the ones we are is a key thing, and I work very much on that. And I also work on the thing that what made me the one I am. And how can we change as adults? There is some material in there on that. The whole process of changing as adults, for the best of us, but also for the good of the other, and consequently for the family, for the relationship. That is such a key aspect of understanding who we are, why we are, and how we can change and help one another. The process of change in areas of need in our adult lives. Number one, acknowledge what has happened. What was my upbringing like? Why? I mean, yes, my father treated me and my brother differently. He was praised, I was the underdog all the time. And that was hard on me. Just to help people to understand how hard that was. And then to express sorrow over loss and injustice, to help people to feel, wow, was that painful when my brother was favored all the time? What did that do to me as a person? How do I bring this into my relationship? Because that sense of smallness I felt here, I don't park that there, I take it with me in here. That joy I had here in my upbringing, some good things, I don't park it, I bring it here. That unresolved issue, that deep scar because of something, I don't leave it here, I bring it to the we part. And that's, as you understand, this is a key area. How can we treat those in adult age? Express sorrow over loss and injustice, There may be about leaving parents and other figures of authority, as you say. You don't have to be like your parents. You don't have to do what they gave of value priorities. There is a point of coming to forgiveness, be able to forgive, because the alternative is to be stuck in bitterness. And the last one is to get new experiences, to break patterns, to get into new, to have new mirrors, to give us a new identity, and how we can break bad patterns. I just want to end with the last point very briefly. Because a marriage is kind of just two different people seeking to live together with all their strengths and with all their weaknesses. We bring with us our own lives. And to the right there, I have, there is a drawing, and you see in the center of it, it says, guard your heart. It's from Proverbs 4. Guard your heart before anything else, because it's the life spring of life, outspring of the wellspring of life, or something like that. I think that the greatest contribution each one of us can have to our marriage is to be an individual, each one of us to be an individual with a growing heart, a growing identity, a growing love for God and for others. Because the heart is the wellspring of life. So when each one, the greatest, as I said, the greatest contribution each one of us can have is to develop our inner life. Our heart for God, our heart for one another, to be the Holy Spirit dwelling in us, the being the change agent in us, the fruit of the Spirit being developed. It starts within. So, I mean, we can learn techniques. I just jumped the whole point about communication. I mean, normally, when people break up, they say, we've stopped communicating. Seldom it is because of disagreements over children or struggling with sexuality or different things about, different opinions about spending money. As long as you're able to talk about those issues, you can manage. But when there's a breakdown of communication, 80% say that. We broke up or we just departed from one another. It was because communication stopped. So, I mean, as we are growing in Christ likeness, Christ and God and the Spirit are communicating all the time. They are communicative. And therefore, whatever we can do, not to, but as I said, we can learn techniques of communication, etc. Of course we can. Therefore, it's much on it. But I mean, the basic and the deepest contribution is that our hearts are strengthened. And therefore, we need to and then look at this last illustration on the bottom. Because each one of us live busy lives, and we meet, there's more and more often we meet people or may have experienced ourselves a burnout or a light kind of burnout or getting overly tired or whatever. I mean, different ways of describing that. And you see that illustration on the bottom corner, the whole idea about it is that our life is kind of a tank. And in one way, it is running out of it. Energy is running out. In work, in family, in Christian ministry, in other volunteer work. It runs out and out and out and out. Some of us have to say, if I continue like this, is it sustainable? Is it sustainable? Do I have to say no to something in church? Do I have to be tougher on my job to say, I see the needs, but I have to take care of myself and my family? Do I have to kind of screw the, whatever the tap or whatever the name of it, half? And that's our responsibility. Do I have to do something with what runs out? And then the second thing is energy leakages. We may have a child with special needs. We may have a kind of an illness others don't see so easily. There may be other factors. We struggle with our finances and we spend much energy on that. To be aware of those leakages is so key because they are demanding. And then the last, and then I stop at that, the last one is what refills us, what gives us energy, each one of us. But because again, the what we end up with in our relationship is kind of the outworking of how each one of us experience our lives. So if one of us is overly tired, of course that has an effect on the other one. So that again, as I said, the greatest contribution each one of us can have is to let Christ do something in our hearts, and that we are responsible stewards of how much we give out, can we do something with the leakages, and what do we do to replenish our lives. Let's pray. Lord, we have just touched on a few but important things about how we relate to one another and what you call to be one. And we just want to thank you for marriage. We thank you for the great things about it. We also acknowledge that there are times we struggle. All of us recognize that. And I just thank you for the thoughts we've been able to share now. And please keep help us to keep them in our hearts. And those things we were not able to cover, I just pray that you help each one of us to journey with you and to journey with one another to create these homes with rest and security, as we read in Isaiah. Please bless each one of us who are in this room. In Jesus' name, amen.